Hello there, and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Right, today's guest is quite simply a biking superstar. She is the first female to have raced the British Superbike Championships and holds a course record on the TT, an average of 120 miles an hour. That is impressive, but this next bit gets me. If she's not fixing bikes, if she's not racing bikes, she is in Hollywood films. Yes, she's a superstar stunt rider as well. It is the one, the only, Jenny Tinmouth.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Good intro.
And deservedly so, Jenny.
I can't wait to get into all this Hollywood stuff, but props will kick off. But I can't believe I wanted to be a stuntman when I was a kid, so you are an absolute legend.
Cool.
he still does, Jenny, when you see him hang around and the escapades that he gets up to. Come on then, tell us where it all starts. We'll get to riding at the speed of sound in Hollywood, but where does the biking story start for you?
I guess right back from passing my test at, well, doing my CBT at 16 and just riding on the road. So my dad had a motorbike and I was just into cars and motorbikes as a kid growing up. So I think it's natural progression to do your CBT at 16 and just get a bike. So my first bike was a little Suzuki 125 and just bombed around on that on the road. So yeah, the love of it, I think definitely came from my family and my dad. And my cousin used to have a little car, a car that used to sort of race, and we used to watch Formula One, and I just loved watching Superbikes and MotoGP and all of that. So yeah, I just proper tomboy, got myself a bike at 16, passed my test at I think I was 17, and then yeah.
Never looked back.
No.
It's brilliant that we talk to a lot of people, myself included, who say, oh, my dad influenced me or my uncle influenced me. But, you know, there's one thing passing your CBT and getting a little 125 and tootling about, you know, as a mode of transport A to B. But I'm assuming you never, ever dreamt that, hang on a minute, being on these two wheels could be a career choice for me. And not only would I be quite good, I'd be brilliant at it. But I want to ask, when you first started racing, what was it quite difficult? Because I'm assuming, obviously, there's not as many female, with all due respect, female racers out there. Do you have to work extra hard to be accepted in the paddock and stuff? What was it like for a girl racing bikes faster than the boys? What was that like? Were you accepted straight away?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. I think because I obviously went in at proper grassroots. I saved up to get a road bike and a VFR 400. After reading all the magazines, I was like, a VFR 400 is a bike you need to have. Bought that, and then I was totally ignorant to racing. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how to start racing. I didn't know how to get my license. I didn't know, you know, I didn't even realise you had to tune your bike or change your gearing or anything. I was so green to it. So I saved up for this bike and just basically I trained to be a motorbike mechanic because I wanted to go racing. I don't know why, I just decided I'd like to have a go at this because I don't see any other girls doing it really, and I don't come from a racing background, and it seems like kind of an impossible thing to do. And that kind of inspired me to want to go and do it just to see if I could, just for fun, really, not obviously to take it as far as I could go, but also to enjoy myself, you know, enjoy the journey, so to speak. So yeah, I saved up for this bike, completely green, got a job as a bike mechanic, went to a racetrack. So when I started racing, the good thing is when you put your helmet on, no one knows you're a girl, do they? So you can sort of blend in. And I think at definite grassroots, no one really takes that much notice. I mean, they might go, oh, there's a girl, but they don't take any notice of you. And I actually kind of relished the thing that no one noticed me and nobody took any notice of me. I just basically chucked my helmet on and got on with it. And then you just make friends in the paddock. I find like bike racing paddocks super friendly and everybody wants to help each other and offer advice. And yeah, so you say like the girl element, it's, for me, it sort of didn't come into it. I guess people noticed that I was a girl, but it's a good friendly environment. So it, yeah, it didn't make too much difference.
Jenny, it's fascinating that you say that because there's that school of thought about, particularly in professional sport, about if you can't see it, you either don't want to be it or you can't comprehend being it. But it's almost, you're the other end of that scale where you kind of went, well, there aren't any girls, so why not me? It's such a wonderfully motivating and inspiring way to go about it. And then, as you say, once you're in there, it's about your ability. It's about what you know about the bikes, and it's about the substance that comes with who you are. And it's, and it seems in that sense, and it's something we've not really spoken about, I don't think, you, when it comes to that side of motorcycle racing, of up until you get on the start line, the grid, wherever, there is that kind of togetherness, isn't there? Everyone's looking out for each other, that kind of checking in on each other. Yes, there's competition once the clock starts, but in and around that, do you feel there's a bit of a family feel to that, where there is the edge, but ultimately you all understand what you're putting yourselves at risk of?
Yeah, definitely. And I think like club, because you have to start as a novice and then go through novice clubman, and everybody's trying to do the same thing. You know, everybody's basically a working class person that's just trying to have a bit of fun, you know, and trying to enjoy themselves at weekend, or try and chase a racing dream, so to speak. So everybody's kind of scrabbling around for money and tyres and borrowing bits off each other and lending, you know, engine parts when your engine goes bang. Or yeah, there's definitely a huge sense of community, I think, in the bike racing paddocks, especially at like the club level, where everyone's just working throughout the week, you know, a 9 to 5, and then going racing at the weekend, and everyone wants to help each other out. Obviously, like you say, on track, everyone wants to beat each other, but yeah, in the paddock, I find it anyway, everybody just wanted to help each other and offer support. So yeah, it's good.
What about the family reaction to this? You inspired by your dad having a bike, but is anyone else chipping in? His mum saying, well, that looks great and all, but I'm not too sure. Was it one of across the board encouragement?
Yeah, my parents are fantastic. They've literally said, me and my brother, whatever we choose to do with our lives, you know, they support us 100%. You know, no, there's never any opposition. Like, my mum had a bike when she was younger. Dad had a bike to commute to work. So she's so chilled. She's like, yeah, whatever you fancy doing is absolutely fine by me, as long as you're happy and content as a human being, so to speak. She's,
that's amazing, yeah, super isn't
supportive. Yeah. Yeah, both parents exactly the same. So I'm very, 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 very lucky with that.
That's good parenting skills right there, I think. Because I don't know what you think, Prots, but I think, you know, if my parents told me I couldn't do something or don't do something, I'd want to go, I'm going to do it then. But to actually have that permission, if you want, that guidance where you go for it, you and your brother chase your dreams. But it's really interesting what you said about, you know, because it's a working class sport, I think people do look out for each other. You're not coming from a background where mummy and daddy have given you the bank of parents to do whatever you want. You look out for each other. But obviously when the lights go out, it's a different story. But what I want to know is, what was your reaction like to you? Yes, when you're a novice, when you're coming through, people want to see you do well. But all of a sudden, you've got the Guinness World Record, the lap record for the TT, which, let's be honest, probably will never be broken, your record. I don't think so. How do people react to you then when they think, hang on, not only is this girl determined and she wants to go places, she can ride a bike. Did it change? Did people's perception of you change?
I don't know. It's hard to say, because we were such a small team. So I was very, very insular in our little bubble of a team. So it's basically me and my business partner, Steve, and a few amazing sponsors that helped me. So I guess I got lots of congratulations when I did super well, and obviously with the Isle of Man and everything. But we were still sort of, we were such a small team, and we were still working here full time and then trying to go racing the weekend. So it was still a massive David and Goliath kind of story, whereby we were still working and trying to, because I'd done after the TT, I was desperate to get into British Superbikes. That was my next target. And again, it's like you were saying, when you come from working class and you don't have any money and stuff, it did have to build up some desire to achieve something that you think is impossible. I had such a fire in me, you know, to try and see if I could achieve something that just seemed so out of reach. And after the TT thing, I put all my eggs in the basket of trying to get into the British Superbike Championship. So again, it was sort of just head down. So I didn't really know the outside perception of what I'd done or anything. It was literally head down, digging harder and try and get to the next dream, so to speak. And all that, it sounds kind of quite corny, I guess, as well. But also the fun of the challenge of trying to do that is half the enjoyment, you know, just seeing if you can, just cheekily going, I wonder if I can do this, you know, is half the fun.
The funny thing that you say there as well, immediately jumps out, Jenny, is the fact that we did that, and then we got the course record, and then we were back to the workshop the following week. You sit there like getting on with your bits and pieces. You might have a to-do list of things you've got to get through in that week, and kind of go, hang on, yeah, that was pretty special at the weekend. Or people coming in and not really understanding what you've achieved, what you've done. I suppose it dovetails into the way that you've just wonderfully described it of it's your desire, it's proving it to yourself and your team and the people that you care about. And if people come along for the journey, great. If not, it's your dream, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because I think when you're, especially as like a fan, when you're watching British Superbikes or World Superbikes or anything, and you, it seems so far off in the distance, doesn't it? It seems like something you could, you'd love to be there and you're inspired by it, but whether you could actually be there or not is another story. And
something on the telly, which as kids yeah. growing up, you go, well, that's never, you, there's such a gap between you sat there and watching and what's in the telly that you can't comprehend the two at the same time, can you?
Yeah, but I think also the influence of my family, because my dad, sort of anything that he wanted to do, he just did. So if he needed to rebuild a bike, he'd learn how to do it and do it. If he needed to build a chimney on the top of our house, he'd learn how to build a chimney. You know, he'd create something out of nothing. And I think that I also had that in my head of, well, you can create something out of nothing, you know, if you yeah. really, really want to.
Would that be, and it's something that we've had some wonderful guests on, and you being the latest of our wonderful guests, Hickey, John McGuinness, Carl Fogarty, James Whitten, people like that that have put themselves in that position on the TT. And don't worry, we're not just going to ask you TT questions, but that, and you talked about the paddock and everyone being quite friendly and it being a sense of togetherness, but just before kickoff, just before that start comes to you, there's moments there, isn't there, where it's just you, the bike and your thoughts before you take off and do what you need to do, what you're born to do. What is running through your head just before you get the nod to set off?
So I was always thinking about the course, really. And I think there's two things, because obviously you're very nervous, but you're also nervous and excited at the same time. And like in my first year, I was just, all I could think of, I can't believe somebody's closing the roads for me to legally ride around absolutely flat out. Because I obviously, riding on the road, that's where I've come from at like 16, 17. I used to go after work. I used to bomb around the roads when there was no one else on the roads and hopefully no police around. But obviously you have to stay on one side of the road. You can't wander and go through red lights. But yeah, the fact that the TT is just, it's still mind-boggling that they will actually shut the roads and let you go as fast as you want to go. So I've also got that in the back of my mind thinking, this is just unreal. You know, somebody's letting us do this. And then obviously the nervousness, because obviously the danger side of it as well. But yeah. And then when I was new to it, I was like, just reeling off the corners, make sure I know where I'm going, because it's so important to know where you're going. I think there's over 270 corners, I think it is. So you've got to remember, there's a huge amount of corners to remember, and all of the markings on the road that Milky Quail's told you to remember. And so all of that's running through my mind. So I think it's a combination of nervous excitement, trying to remember the course, and the cheekiness of thinking somebody's going to let me do this. You know, it's just bonkers.
That's and I'm sure you'll agree, that's the first time I've heard anyone say that. I say anyone that we've spoken to that's done the TT going hell for leather. No one's answered it like that. I love that. I can't believe someone's let me do this. See you, bye, everyone. I'm going to go and enjoy myself for a little bit.
Yeah, do you know what I love about your answer there, Jenny? You articulated it so well. It's just your excitement, your pure, like, enthusiasm of, wow, I'm doing it. Someone's shut the roads for me. They shut the roads. You're there because you deserve to be there. But what's more nerve-wracking, because this fascinates me, going full chat around the Isle of Man course or working on films, and I'm not talking straight to DVD films. You've worked with Tom Cruise on the Mission Impossible franchise. Surely that has to be just as nerve-wracking, getting that call saying, oh, by the way, Hollywood have called and they want you to be working with Tom Cruise. I mean, how did that come about, and how did that feel when you initially worked in Hollywood? Because as a little kid, I always wanted to be a stuntman. I was never going to be good enough to be a motorbike racer, but I was stupid enough to throw myself out of windows or whatever. But being a stunt woman, surely that is a buzz. How did that come about?
They needed a female to double Rebecca Ferguson, so the Ilsa character in the Mission Impossibles.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite good about the political correctness of today society, whereby you need a woman to double a woman. So historically, you would have, potentially a guy would have done it. So they basically needed a female that could ride a 1,000cc sports bike, which obviously I'd done, around a kind of mountain course, because it was going to be filmed in Morocco on the Atlas Mountains. So my name got put forward, and we went for an audition down at Goodwood where I met the stunt coordinator and some of the other stunt guys. And we just did basically an audition. Following him in a car, he's an insanely good driver, and he was just drifting the car around while like six or seven of us were trying to follow him and just play off each other and play off the car in close quarters and listen to instruction from him over an earpiece in our helmets. And then as long as you're, you know, competent and can do what you instructed to do, luckily, I got the job. So the first, in Mission Impossible 5, everyone was riding BMW S1000RR, so sports bikes, and it was all fast. It was a fast motorbike chasing, and it was pretty cool. So yeah, luckily, over the moon, I got the job, because it was just, again, it's one of those experiences I would never have dreamt of having, and just one of the best experiences of my life.
Take me back to Goodwood though. When you're on the earpiece and you know there's other female riders there trying to get the part, are you really conscious of, I can't mess up, I've got to be a little bit brave and maybe a bit crazy here, I need this job? Or is it just for you, it sounds like you go through life enjoying the experience and
having
wow,
fun.
This is a cool day out, I'm enjoying it. But were you a little bit nervous thinking there's a lot relying on this, or did you just teach it as, you know, take it as any other day? Because I would be like, loving it.
Yeah, I just took it as any other day. I was just enjoying the whole experience, just going, wow, I can't even believe I'm here and this is brilliant. And feel it, honestly, absolutely, because I was so comfortable on the bike as well, that didn't really cross my mind anything. I just wanted to do what they told me to do. And it was, I don't want to sound cocky, but it was easy, because it's not racing British superbikes, you know. It was just taking a bit of instruction and riding a bike. And obviously following a car and a camera vehicle is not as fast, so I just, I took it as another day and was just, again, enjoying the whole experience of it.
Did you pop a couple of wheelies just to show off a little bit? If I was finding it easy, I would have been loving it.
No, I tried to be like really, really sensible and just do what they asked me to do.
There's a real contrast, Jenny. I'm sure you can tell between your approach to things and you and Thomas's approach to stuff. Hey, Tom, look at me, Tom. Look what I'm doing. I suppose within that as well, it's another industry to get your foot in the door with. So when you are potentially in with someone like a Wade Eastwood, does that then help you to become a trusted member of that particular crew of someone that is on the books now that, A, does a fantastic job, B, it seems as well, just from chatting with you for a few minutes now, very much part of a team, good to get along with. Because I presume when you are on set doing these bits and bobs, and I'm sure Ewan's got questions about how you practice that type of thing, but I presume there's long days and you've got to be a good part of a team, you've got to be a good tourist, you've got to be able to be as low maintenance as you possibly can and do your job, basically, haven't you?
Yeah, basically everything you just said, exactly that. You've got to be part of a team, got to take instruction, you've got to be, like you say, it can be long days and it's quite easy to sort of switch off and drift away from listening to the headset, you know, and you can be called at any moment, so you have to be on the ball. And I think being part of the team is quite one of the biggest things, because all the people that I met on the first job were the nicest people I've ever met, you know, like absolutely outstanding performers. All the stunt team was great. They're like, you know, Olympic champions in boxing or you know, just the best at what they do. And they were so humble and so nice and such a great group of people that I met from all different countries as well. And just, I think being part of that stunt team was one of the things that I'll take away from the job, you know, that I enjoyed the most.
And I suppose you all respect, it sounds a little bit like you're all patting yourselves on the back. Excellence is respected, isn't it? So someone's looking at, here's Jenny, she rides motorbikes. Oh, wow, she really does ride motorbikes really quite well. So there's that respect for you. Like you say, if there's a champion, former boxer or whatever the background is, whether it's, I don't know, martial arts and everything that goes into making a movie. Because there was that movie, The Fall Guy, that was out just a few years ago, and Ryan Gosling's press tour was all about really showing everyone just what the stunt department does, saying, no, these need to be pushed forward to get the respect for what they do. Because, yes, these pretty Hollywood people get the big wedge at the top for it and all the accolades and all the attention. But without people like you, Mission Impossible doesn't look the same film, does it? If it's CGI someone on a motorbike, doesn't look the same at all.
No, it's incredible, actually. The stunt team do so much for a film, especially something like Mission Impossible or like a Fast and Furious or anything like that, because they'll design the whole sequence. You know, they would have rehearsed the sequence beforehand, or say like a fight scene, they'd come up with a fight. They would have actually invented the fight scene for the film and then rehearsed it and then presented the fight scene to the producer and say, the director, and say, you know, and the director will agree to it or whatever. But they build the action.
They do the work.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, I've been privy to some behind the scenes, like fight scene choreography, and it's just incredible, you know, what they do. And the videos that they do behind the scenes in the in their studio, just with boxes of, and, you know, plastic knives and things. But the way they put it together is just fantastic. And they deserve so much credit, because most of the action films wouldn't have the action without the stunt team, you know. Mm. Again, that's another thing, because I coming from, like, little girl from Elsmanport, whatever, but being in that environment just, it's so incredible, and it gives you a whole new light on the way that you view a movie now. When you watch it, you know what's gone into making it.
Yeah. What I love about Tom Cruise's films, when I watch and find out, you know, he's in his 60s now, but he does a lot of stunts himself, doesn't he? What is it like when you are doing a stunt with him, or he's seeing you at work? Forget the added pressure that, you know, one of Hollywood's or the world's biggest superstars, you're in his film. Has anyone ever sort of gone, you are good? Is it nice when you get a compliment for your work? Because I know it's just your job and you do it and it comes naturally, but what you can do on a bike, myself and Props would never dream of doing. We haven't got the level of skill to do that. What's it like when you've had a good day in the office and you've performed a good film, you've done some great stunts for that film, and people have gone, that was good? It must be lovely to get that, you know, respect.
Yeah, definitely. I think as somebody who wants to always do well, especially from the racing background, you're always wanting to achieve really high. When you're doing a stunt, you want to do the best you can possibly do, and you're kind of seeking that approval from the stunt coordinator or director to say you've done a good job. You know, you always want to do the best you can. And it was nice in that environment as well. It was high pressure, and they do expect a lot of you, but it is kept safe. And the way that one of the things with Wade as well, he's so good at, he knows he's picked, well, he's picked the best people for the job, you know, and he believes in you, and he's kind of installs that belief in yourself because he believes in you as well. So it was such a good environment to be in, and I did really, really enjoy it, and I did just want to do the best I could when I was there, definitely.
I mean, just in the fundamentals of how it gets from what you're doing, wherever the set is, to us sat there in the cinema watching it, A, do you practice it? If so, how much? And B, is there this is the one, everyone. This is the take. Like almost like a race. We're going to start here, we're going to end there. This is the one that we're using. Or do you sometimes look back at it and think, well, that was from the first time we did it. They've chopped in something from the second or third time we've done it. That was a bit further down the line. How does it kind of all get pulled together, Jenny?
It sort of depends on the stunt. So lots of it's rehearsed massively beforehand. So anything like when we were weaving in between cars at quite high speed, that was all rehearsed on a track. And just so, because there's lots of stunt performers in cars that have got to be aware of motorbikes coming through. So it'll be rehearsed. And then we'll shoot it on the day, but then there'll be several different camera angles. So you'll do it several times. But then there'll be other sequences where basically a car or bike is literally going to get written off, and it is a one-time job. But it'll be planned meticulously, you know, and there'll be numerous cameras at various different points, you know, to capture all the angles. And I think that's the thing with the stunt team, because they're so experienced, you know, the guys that are on there are so experienced in what they do. It's kind of precision stunt work, you know, they know what's going to happen, they kind of know where the car's going to flip and land, and so they can do like a one take thing. But you do the nerves when that's going to happen, you know, it's a one take. Like we were in Budapest for Black Widow, and they had a truck that basically had to flip in the air, and that was a one-time thing. We all stood at the side, being like safety, yeah. And basically knowing this was a one-time thing, and it's so privileged. I felt so privileged to stand there and watch it. And
was it fine?
Yeah, it's completely fine.
I just thought if that one where it happens, it doesn't go right, and everyone looks around and goes, did we get it? You see the director just tearing his hair out, going, no. Because I suppose, like you say, it's not just the safety. I mean, obviously, hopefully, if you're flipping a truck, no one's in it. Not just the safety, but the money involved, I bet, isn't it? You've got a lot of money riding on it.
Yeah, we did. Well, we just recently did one in Paris, which I was lucky to be involved in. I had to ride an electric bike. And there's a stunt guy called Rob Hunt, who's amazing. Any car sequences, he's been in them. He had to jump a car. But we were in Paris on streets that you don't really want to damage. And that, again, that was a one-time thing because if it went wrong, we were into some priceless monument and or into some buildings. And the car was literally going to get written off as he landed, but he jumped. I think it was like 84. I was so high in the air, and I was underneath him. And again, that was a one-time thing, because that car was written off. He'd written off another car that he crashed into, that he was meant to crash into. I don't think they wanted to do it any more times, because I don't think they were meant to be doing it. They didn't want to damage the street, but it was so good.
That's scary stuff. Let's just have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. My adrenaline's going through the roof here. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. So that's the stunt side of it. Jenny, the other side of it is, which I'm sure myself and Ewan are dying to ask, is do you then get to rub shoulders with the superstars? You talked about Black Widow, we talked about Mission Impossible. Has there been a Tom Cruise and Jenny conversation that you've had?
Yeah, like Mission Impossible 5, we did a huge amount of training in the UK. So we went to Silverstone Circuit for a little bit of training there and Rockingham, obviously Goodwood. And then when we were away, we were away for 6 weeks in Morocco. And I was so lucky because I was part of the core stunt team, so with Wade Eastwood, right at the kind of the top level, you know, from nothing to that. And there was elements where Rebecca's character and Tom's character had to film. We were in Casablanca and we had to film in Rabat the next day. So Wade said to me, "You're basically going on Tom's private jet with Tom because we need you in Rabat." And I'm just. So he's like, you need to get in the taxi. After shooting one day, you need to get in the taxi. So I jump in the taxi and Simon Pegg's in the back of the taxi.
No.
It's Simon Pegg. And then we went off and we went zip wiring on the way because Tom's obviously quite adrenaline junkie. So we went to a zip wire thing on the way. And then we went to the airport and I'm just sat in the back of Tom's private jet going, this is just surreal.
That is insane.
Completely.
What is going through your mind, right? Because I daydream a lot in life, and you know, do you flash back to that 16-year-old girl doing the CBT and thinking, how on earth am I in a private jet with Tom Cruise when I just passed my test to commute a little bit? I mean, what kind of is going through your mind when you're in that private jet? Do you have to act cool? Obviously, you can't go, oh my God, I want some extra refresh. You've got to sit there and go, yeah, I'm cool. But inside, you must be bursting and forget your pride. What do your family think of all this? The fact they must be so proud that you are rubbing shoulders with like Tom Cruise and in his private jet. I mean, what on earth goes through everyone's mind?
Yeah, I think they're proud. And for me, I was just, again, just taking the whole situation in, just going, this is unreal. You know, I never thought I'd be sat here. And obviously I'm only there off the grace of Wade and the stunt team and Tom himself, because it's his film. But just taking it in, saying, well, this is just incredible. And I just find it interesting how other people live their lives, or you know what happens in other people's lives, like the movie side of thing compared to the racing side of thing compared to the workshop side of thing, just getting to experience the whole different places in the world, you know. Just I was more blown away by that. It's just so interesting. But yeah, just completely surreal, and it's incredibly lucky to do it. And then I think I lost all street cred, because I thought, this is probably the only film I'm ever going to do, this is the only time I'm ever going to be in this situation. So I had to go in for the selfie. I was like, please. I literally thought, I'm embarrassing myself, but I'm going to do it. So I did.
I think we'd both forgive you for that. I mean, it's, again, like you say, it's such a world away from where you started to where you got to. I just love the fact that he wants to go and do zip wiring for an adrenaline fix when you're kind of sat there going, you have just seen me toss that bike around between all these cars, and I'm all set for adrenaline. I think there was another interview that I'd read along those lines. I think it was a Simon Pegg interview where he said about when you're on with Tom, you're on, and it's right, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, and you've got to try and keep up with a man whose energy is just bursting at the seams. So going from that, in the journey that you've got to be able to do that as part of your really broad set of skills, Jenny, my word, is it a broad set of skills? Do you still, and I'm preempting potentially what your answer is here, do you still get out on and ride for fun? Does that 16-year-old with a CBT in a pocket still go out and have a little poodle around where you live and enjoy riding for what it is, a release, a pleasure, a joy?
Yeah, I mean, not a huge amount. I've got a few road bikes, but I don't get out a huge amount, but I do love it when I get a chance to. And we recently did a massive charity run from Land's End up to John O'Groats in a day. And it was, it was this year on the longest day. It's called the Longest Day Challenge. It was fantastic. I just had a VFR 800 because you have to buy a bike that's worth 600 quid or less and try and make it from Land's End to John O'Groats for charity, for cancer research. And I enjoyed it so much. It was just a road ride with a load of mates kind of up to Scotland. I loved it. And I'd like to do more, but it's getting time with everything that I do. But I have still got a trials bike and enduro bike, and I just love going out. I'm literally just cutting me off. It says motorbike, basically, because I work on them or I'm riding them. I love them, yeah. So,
you know, I just love your outlook on life. Like, it's lovely hearing you talk and your enthusiasm for bikes, and you know that cancer research challenge you did, that charity ride. It seems to me you probably got as much enjoyment out of that as perhaps a Hollywood film. I don't know, but what is it like now? We're seeing you in your workshop. I think I know the answer to this, but you're happy back on the tools as well, aren't you? You know, one minute you're in Hollywood on a private jet with Tom Cruise, the next minute you're on the spanners fixing bikes. I mean, you've got a very varied life.
Yeah, no, I love it. Like, I love it in here. It's mad, isn't it? And then I do like fixing customers' bikes. And especially I've got one in the moment that's got a problem. I'm dying to fix it. It's a bit mad, isn't it? But yeah, I love it. And then obviously this is like my own business, so it's me and my business partner. And I'm proud of it. You know, it's nice to have our own little workshop, and I get to work on motorbikes every day, and it's different, you know, when I get to chat to customers that come in that have been on adventures to Europe, or they're telling me about their rides up to Scotland and stuff. And yeah, I feel dead lucky. It doesn't matter where I am, I'm dead happy.
Jenny, do you ever get that conversation where someone's telling you about their achievements and they don't quite know who they're telling this to? Like, oh, I've done this and I went quite fast at this. And you're going there going, oh, that sounds lovely. Yeah, congratulations. You don't strike me as the type of person to need to chuck down the ego card.
No, my business partner does it a bit, though. You get somebody who's come in that's done a track day at Oulton Park, and then they want to know how fast I've been wrong. And Steve will tell them. I'm like, I don't want to say anything, but
yeah, it makes me laugh to think that someone might just poddle in and poddle out and not be any the wiser. You mentioned your workshop; it really does look like your happy place. And the little glimpse that we can see in the background, I presume yours is quite a ship-shaped workshop. Everything in its right place. Anything left out? The type of floor that you can eat your dinner off, all that type of stuff?
No, the floor needs painting. I've got to paint the floor. But I do like it tidy. It's just easier, isn't it? If you're working on the motorbike, if you know where your spanners are, it's so much easier. Everything's pretty much got a place. But yeah, the floor definitely needs painting.
I've done quite a few, over the years, I've done a few track days. I was just thinking, when you mentioned Oulton Park there, I mean, I would assume your favourite place to race would be the TT with the Guinness World Record, I'm assuming. But if it is, what's your second favourite place to race then? For people who are listening or watching this, you know, who do track days, what would be the one track, let's say in the UK, that you would say you've got to have a day on that one? What's your favourite track?
I would say Oulton, actually, because it is, it's my local track and one of the ones that I first went to. I went to watch touring cars and first one I went to watch British Superbikes at, and it's just a fantastic track. It's hard though, isn't it?
It's a tough one. Yeah.
It's technical. It's a technical track, but I think that's why I like it, because it's hard to learn, but it's fast. There's no, even the chicanes are quite fast, you know, and the hairpin's amazing. You go to some tracks and the chicanes are just annoying, but like the hairpin's good and the chicanes are fast and flowing, so. And it's undulating. There's a bit of everything to it. So I would say Oulton Park, if you're going to do a track day, try and get your head around Oulton Park, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, all of it still absolutely terrifies me. I've just been reading up about that, the charity ride that did £120,000 you raised doing that. That is a staggering amount of money.
Yeah, John McAvoy organises it. So he writes for Fast Bikes magazine, I think it is. And he's got something called PB Evo. He's organised it for quite numerous years now. And yeah, it's all credit to him. Him and his wife organise it and set up the pit stops on the way and give us the accommodation when we get to John O'Groats, if we get to John O'Groats. Yes, it's full credit to him.
Amazing. And the thing as well, when you said a bike that costs 600 quid, for myself or you, that would be an absolute Hail Mary of getting anywhere. But the fact that you actually know what you're doing, if it does start making a noise or rattling or something starts leaking. Get your tool bag out. You'd have had that up ship shape in no time, wouldn't you?
Perhaps I think you're misleading there. It wouldn't cost me £600 or £800. I'll blag it for free. You know me. I'll have a I'm joking. Honestly, Jenny, perhaps takes a mickey out of me because
king of the freebies, Jenny.
Air fryers, whatever. I'm a king of a freebie. So yeah, that charity bike ride, I'd probably try and blag the bike for free. You know me. But it sounds amazing. Like Pratt said, you must also be equally proud of that, to be part of a team that raised such a vast amount of money. £120,000 is a lot of money, which is helping a lot of people. That must make you proud as well.
Yeah, it was one of the best things I've ever done. I enjoyed it so much. I mean, it took us 25 hours, to be fair. But I loved it, every minute of it, even when we'd run like the 25th hour up in the Scotland, because we went through a sunset and then a sunrise. And I think the sense of achievement, like you say, for raising some money for charity as well, I'm so proud of that. That's brilliant for me as well. And I have a sponsor actually who passed away from cancer, so it was in his memory, and it meant a lot to me to do it. And amazing. I think the other thing, I did actually feel guilty, because normally when you're doing things for charity, it's supposed to be you're putting yourself through pain,
aren't you?
But I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed it so much. But yeah, it took us longer than we expected, but still good fun. And everyone that did it, like there was lots of people that went on like old Triumphs, and some old bikes that did sort of break down on the way that they managed to fix on the way, and everyone that took part, it was a proper endurance race for everybody, and I'm kind of proud of everyone that did it, and it was it was brilliant.
You mentioned that word proud and pride a few times there. Given what you've done, Jenny, and it's been fascinating to chat and listen to where your life's taken you, and I'm sure this is only there's so much more coming your way. This is only a snapshot of what you've done so far. You mentioned how proud you are of that, of doing the charity ride and being part of it. Is that the proudest moment so far, or is there another one? Is it Hollywood? Is it being as fast as you've been? Is it success on the track? What is it?
I think, all of it. I mean, proud of that. Definitely proud of the TT achievement. Proud of getting into British Superbikes, to actually run my own little team, and then to race for Honda in British Superbikes. Because I'm really proud of that, because that was a dream that I didn't know if I could do, but we did it. And then, to be up there with the top boys, I've raced Dunlop, McGuinness, Hutchie, everybody. I've been sat on the grid next to Shaky Byrne and Hager,
Amazing.
All the top boys that I admire massively. To be even, near them has just been a dream come true. And to try and aspire to be as good as them has been brilliant. So I'm immensely proud of that, and immensely proud of them. Even like my 125 days, when I managed to get into lead of a British race on my little 125, I'd never had new tyres at that point. I was on old tyres, and to get to the lead, I was just, I'll never forget that either. Like, no one else remembers it, but I remember it because I was so proud of that moment. So yeah, there's quite a few things really.
I tell you what, me and Prats are proud to have had you on, because genuinely, your smile is infectious, and your storytelling, I absolutely love it. But we're going to finish with the big one if we can, Jenny. So it could be your ride that you've already done for cancer research. I don't know, but we want your perfect ride, your fantasy ride. So where are you riding? What bike are you riding on? Who is with you? Please say Tom Cruise. And if you are listening to music, what would be your soundtrack? So you can pick anywhere in the world, any bike, any companion, any music. Where are you going?
It's quite off piece one, but I've always wanted to see Rossi's Ranch. So can I say Rossi's Ranch?
Yeah.
Well, with Rossi on any flat tracker. So I know he's a Yamaha man, but a Honda or a Yamaha flat tracker, because I absolutely love flat tracking. So I'm going to say Rossi's Ranch with Rossi would be the dream, definitely.
And are you listening to some Italian opera, or what are you going to be listening to? Is there any music, or not going to bother with music? Just
that would probably be apt, wouldn't it? A bit of Italian opera. Yeah. Pumping out over the loudspeakers.
I must admit, Prats, that's an unusual. We've normally had people say Route 66 on a Harley with my best mate Dave or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that Rossi's Ranch, that is... Yeah, cool, I don't know how relaxing that would be trying to follow him around. I don't know, but that is definitely idyllic. That's a good image.
It's just been a pleasure, Jenny. I think your approach to it is you can get deep and a bit existential about it, about living in the moment. But that just sounds like literally what you've done from minute one. Every single moment that's come by, you've been locked into it. You've enjoyed it for what it is. Like you say about getting a selfie on Tom Cruise's plane. I might as well get a selfie because I won't be back here. Oh, actually, I'm coming back again. I'm part of the team now. Oh, I'm in quite a lot of stuff. So it just again shows almost that kind of, and I mean this, and I absolutely do mean this as a compliment, that kind of Forrest Gump element of just wandering into things, going, well, this sounds pretty cool. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll crack on. Suddenly you're in the background of all these major things that have happened and been a huge part of racing, of the TT, of Hollywood, and it just been something that you've loved from minute one, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a bonus, isn't it? Whatever comes, whatever happens is a bonus. Yeah, I don't take it lightly. You know, I've worked so hard. I've sacrificed everything to do it, and all my money and everything's gone into it. I've worked really, really hard, but everything's still, like, from zero upwards, everything's a bonus. So yeah, I just definitely, and I definitely appreciate the moment. You hear lots of racers say, I never appreciated the moment. I think I've definitely appreciated everything, you know, and taking everything in wonderment and awe of, and enjoyed it. Yeah,
that's an amazing way to finish. Everything from zero and upwards is a bonus. I'll definitely take that. Sadly, unfortunately, that's about it for this week's Full Chat, powered by Bikeshaw. One of our best episodes, I think you'll agree. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and so much more.
I've got to say, one of the best episodes, because one of the best guests. Honestly, there's a humble innocence about you, Jenny, and we have absolutely loved talking to you. It's been an absolute delight. Thank you so much, the one and only Jenny Timmoth.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been a star. Please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from to get yourself up to date with all of our episodes so far.
And thank you, as ever, so much for listening. We can't wait to welcome you all back next time. Goodbye.